So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time. Waiting for tonight. Oh.
So, take a look.
It's John Pollock and Wei Ting, and it's another edition of Review Away, where today, Wei, we are looking back at the 1994 Survivor Series from November of 1994 in San Antonio, Texas. And I do have to say that I did avoid a huge problem today as I was leaving for work, and all of a sudden I noticed this black book that I had left near my couch that had all my notes, which thankfully I noticed and did not leave after watching this entire 2-hour and 45-minute interview.
This is why I've since reverted to using a laptop now. That Wei I can email myself.
That's
my
smart.
Notes.
I'm still using the notebook here and writing it longhand, which is not the smartest idea because on more than one occasion, either one of us has forgotten our notes. So if it happens again, it'll most likely be me.
I gotta say, this is probably like one of the first times in a while that we've actually done this the Wei it's supposed to be done on the Fridays.
Yes.
During the week.
I know, it's a little odd.
Yeah.
Well, with that said, we're going to get to the Survivor Series right now. It had an Alamo theme to it, Wei, because San Antonio is in the Alamo, and they felt the need to have quite the themed-out pay-per-view here, where the commentators, Vince McMahon and Gorilla Monsoon, I thought a horrible choice of having two babyface commentators who are both distinctively play-by-play announcers working together. I didn't understand this.
I don't know. Oh, well, Lawler, I guess, was in the match. So
that's
he couldn't
true.
Be used.
So they had, and Bobby Heenan had left by this point.
Right. So the opening to this pay-per-view, I thought was very funny. They started out with all these Survivor Series elimination matches. They went to backstage where they showed the teams talking to each other.
Yep.
And there's like a really funny part where Lex, who like the Lex team, they're going to fight the Million Dollar Corporation. He says, "What it comes down to is principle. There are some things you just can't put a price on."
And then I'm wondering why all these teams are allowing these cameras on them, and then it's only Jerry Lawler who acknowledges the camera, breaks the fourth wall, and kicks the cameraman out of their locker room.
Mm.
Very smart. They're strategizing here.
Yeah.
Like, what if it was recorded earlier in the day? Obviously, the talent's going to be in the back in the gorilla position watching this. Why would you air your strategies and just allow a camera? That's what I always don't understand with 24/7. I mean, when Mayweather has a sparring session, he kicks the cameras at HBO out.
Because
Pacquiao's watching.
I don't know.
Potentially, Pacquiao will be watching if they do a 24/7 there. Like that save?
What?
Because they haven't done a 24/7 with Pacquiao and Mayweather. But they will. Anyway, back to wrestling, Wei. And our first matchup of the evening is the Teamsters. How many hours do you think was spent on that name? The Teamsters. Diesel, Shawn Michaels, Owen Hart, Jim Neidhart, and Jeff Jarrett taking on Razor Ramon, the 1-2-3 Kid, the British Bulldog, and the Head Shrinkers, which were Fatu and Sione,
who
are managed by
know.
Captain Lou Albano, the late Captain Lou Albano. This would have been probably one of his last pay-per-view appearances, I would assume.
Well, save for the Heroes of Wrestling.
Well, yes, WWF pay-per-view appearance, we'll leave it at. During the entrance, Shawn Michaels instantly getting heat and teasing the finish here as he cuts ahead of Diesel to get to the ring and stealing the spotlight. And he must have had the girliest looking ponytail, and his hair looked horrible, Wei. It was tied like he looked like a Rapunzel.
There was definitely a point that you can tell what era of Michaels' career it is, judging by his hair. I mean, obviously now he's losing it, but before then, while he was still a heel, he sort of had a propped up front end to it. Once he turned face, he started, you know, dressing it down and having a bit of a more softer look.
Yeah, he always kind of had that mullet in the mid-90s.
Yes.
And funny enough that this past week on TNA Impact, Kevin Nash was talking about his new alliance with Eric Young and stating how I used to run around with another guy who his hair, and he described Shawn Michaels' hair as a Kentucky waterfall.
Okay.
Bit of a mullet, he said. And then, and this was right after, I watched
waterfall.
The Survivor Series and then watched Impact. And I was like, these wrestling's all connected somehow.
Yeah.
Fatu was in an awesome storyline at this point where he had trouble working with his boots on.
What the hell is this? Like, I didn't understand this at all. Was this an actual ongoing storyline?
It was an ongoing storyline where eventually he went on a losing streak because he couldn't work with ring boots on. So why didn't he take the boots off?
That was the storyline, because they usually wrestle without boots because they're Samoan.
Yeah, they're Samoan. Oh. And they don't wrestle with boots.
So he's not used to the boots. And that's why he kept fiddling with his boot this whole match. I didn't understand that at all.
Some great comedy in this match because Jeff Jarrett, of course, had released a fictitious single called Ain't I Great at the time. And Monsoon chirped in that it's available on the NAA label. Not available anywhere.
Did we mention who was on the bad guys, who was on the opposite team?
Yeah, I listed them. Razor Ramon, the 1-2-3 Kid, the British Bulldog, and the Head Shrinkers.
Oh, sorry, I wasn't paying
attention. Head Shrinkers. Very PG name for some Samoans.
Yeah, yeah.
The Head Shrinkers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, I thought, Sean Waltman, I thought he looked great here, up until a point early on when he and Neidhart messed up a spot. But Waltman... He was completely different by this time.
He was very good in this match. I also thought the chemistry of Owen and the Bulldog was pretty solid in this match. When they got in there, they were just doing a lot of technical wrestling.
Owen was bumping like crazy for Davey Boy.
It always amazes me how smooth Bulldog was even when he was on that amount of gas.
Yeah, I agree.
Because
you got
to remember that when he came to Stampede, his natural frame held like 175 pounds, and he must have hit close to 300 in the WWF. And it's amazing that he could still move.
But I would say by this point, he definitely was not his most mobile self.
No, but at the same time, he was still doing kip-ups and chain wrestling with Owen Hart.
Yeah.
Not the average work you would get out of a roid head.
Interesting fact about this matchup, John. This 15-year-old match features four members of the current TNA roster.
I thought the exact same thing, including Jim Neidhart, who fucking worked on TV last week.
Yes.
And looked like he ate half the team on here.
Oh, yeah.
What else of note in this match? They played up that 12 minutes into the match, Diesel and Michaels had not got in, and then Diesel tagged in, and he delivered a shitty clothesline and a powerbomb to eliminate Fatu.
Mm-hmm.
Then Sean Waltman attempted a top rope sunset flip, but he couldn't get Nash off his feet, so he picked him up, slammed him, and then powerbombed him for the elimination. He then almost murdered Sione by almost dropping him on his head with another jackknife powerbomb to eliminate him. So it's 5-on-2 at this point. And then, I'll just go through the last elimination because I know you have a thought here. Owen and Jarrett take the Bulldog out of the ring and get him counted out. So Bulldog was the legal man, and now it's down to 5-on-1.
5-on-1 with Razor left. I thought Michaels did a great job here, simply acting on the apron, not like he being a goof, bossing Nash around, and building to that breakup between the two of them.
Yeah, this was risky, taking perhaps the best worker of the whole lot here and leaving him out of the match. But they were trying to tell a deeper story for the finish.
Yes.
Hall and Nash then got in, and boy, was this bad. I thought these two had zero chemistry together in the ring. And this was 94 when they were both at least mobile.
And so what happens, John?
Well, I did note that Vince did...
Ugh!
I'm leaving that in.
Oh, God.
I had to sneeze, guys.
We're in a tight room here, John. You just sneezed all over.
Swine flu. Where were we? Vince referred to Diesel as a one-man gang. Michaels, as you mentioned, Wade, just being a prick in the corner and ordering around Diesel. Diesel eventually delivers a jackknife to Razor Ramon. Michaels insists on getting the tag. And then he said, no, wait. Hold him up while I give him a super kick. Now, I always hate this spot, Wei, because it makes no sense. A, 9 times out of 10, God, 10 times out of 10, the babyface moves out of the way, and you get hit in the face. Now, if I were to hold someone in front of me, Wei, like they did, and you were to kick him in the head, his head's going to ricochet into my jaw. Why would I hold him there? Put him in the corner against the turnbuckles if he can't support his own weight. But don't, you're just going to kick a guy into you. It's bad news either way. So Razor Ramon got out of the way. Michaels kicked Diesel in the face with the super kick. And Diesel said, enough. And they noted this is the third time on television that Michaels has done this, and Diesel was not having anything of it. Monsoon yells, "The honeymoon is over!" And then, this made no sense, because Michaels started retreating for the backstage area, Diesel went after him, and then the Teamsters, Jim Neidhart, Owen Hart, and Jeff Jarrett, all followed him. Owen is the only one who gives a shit here, saying, "Get back in the ring, we're gonna get counted out! We're gonna lose the match!" They all get counted out. However, only Michaels was the legal man. So how did the rest of the team get counted out when earlier in the same match we had Owen and Jarrett outside the ring with Bulldog and only Bulldog, the legal man, got counted out?
Because there's nobody else on the apron. Once one person gets counted out, the other person.
But that would be individual counts of 10, would it not? They
I
had to go through a count of 50 to get back then. Because there were five of them.
You're right, John.
The 10 count was for Michaels.
So what does this mean?
It means that this was a bullshit finish, and they shouldn't have booked it to go so long. 12 minutes of back and forth. Did we really need 12 minutes of the head shrinkers and Fatu's dilemma with the boots? Nonetheless, this sets up a future match between Shawn Michaels and Kevin Nash, which would take place at the following year's WrestleMania.
Yes. This is really a non-factor in terms of an in-ring action, but they were
the
focusing
main focus
on the
story was line, Michaels and Diesel.
And I thought they did a pretty good job of telling that story, at least. Afterwards, Michaels runs to his car in the back while Todd Pettengill follows him. And the first.
This was some foreboding of a future Survivor Series.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly.
Car waiting for him in the back.
Yes, Michaels is just fearing for his life from Nash. Then the next time we see Nash, he's at the WWF hotline talking to a fan about what had just happened.
Well, he's got to stop and let the fans know. These newly won fans of his. Todd Pettengill was in a cowboy hat following Shawn Michaels, and my God, was Todd Pettengill horrible, and we'll talk about it later on because he's in a number of interviews.
He's not any worse than any of the other guys that they had.
Oh, he was just so lame. I hated him. Next up, we've got the Royal Family, which are Jerry Lawler, Cheesy, Sleazy, and Queasy.
Why would he name the Royal Family Cheesy, Sleazy, and Queasy? I mean, other than the smell of cheesy, I guess.
Well, that's because they all rhyme, Vince.
Against Doink, Dink, Wink, and Pink, known as Clowns R Us, a play on the words Toys R Us.
Really?
Isn't that clever?
Go ahead.
This match was just all comedy and clearly Vince McMahon's abuse of Jerry Lawler, a former icon of Memphis wrestling, a former AWA world champion, and yeah, he's doing this shit.
Well, I mean, come on. By this point, I don't think Lawler had the feud with Bret, but I don't think people really saw him as a main eventer anymore. But
based on his age?
Based on anything. The fact that he's a commentator, first of all. I don't know. Did you consider him a WrestleMania main event material?
All I'm going to say is they put a title on a guy here who was 46.
Well, that is true.
And to me, if you're putting a gun to my head of who's going to be our top heel, I'm definitely picking Jerry Lawler over Bob Backlund in 1994.
Anyway, I had no problems with this, but number one, because Lawler has great comedic sense, and I think
he's very good in this
he's
role.
He's an excellent comedic
wrestler.
He
at least made this work.
Yes. But go on with the match, John.
Vince and Gorilla were constantly poking fun at Lawler's weight. This guy just must have had so much heat, because when he was doing Memphis and USWA, he would go on there and just cut promos on the WWF, and all the guys were on steroids. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, the USWA signed an agreement with the WWF to be almost a feeder system for them. And suddenly Jerry Lawler was brought in as a commentator, and I guess they just had their fun with Lawler. At one point, someone got a Burger King crown and put it on Lawler's head because, get it, Burger King, which was a big chant at the time.
A lot of the comedy spots in this match involved the midgets, where Doink and his midgets would do one thing, and then Lawler and his midgets would try to attempt the same spot, but they would mess up. Vince thought it was really funny.
Vince laughed so loud.
His laugh is weird.
So fake.
It's like, ha, 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 ha. I wonder if he ever watches these tapes. Do you think
he ever
turns on 24/7 and
never,
watches?
Never. Sleazy had just hair all over his body. It was like he was wearing a sweater.
Yeah, yeah.
It's gross.
Another spot I enjoyed was where Dink gets on top of Doink. Just sits him, sits on his shoulders, and then Lawler tells another one of his midgets to you know get over here. But so then when the midget climbs the top rope to sit on Lawler, Lawler says no. Lawler climbs the top rope and sits on the midget instead.
This was great. Fall over. He fell. The midget had to have been 90 pounds, and Lawler had to have been easily 215.
Oh, yeah.
It's great.
I enjoyed that.
Doink attempted a flying body press, but it was reversed by Lawler, who grabbed the tights, and Doink was eliminated
first.
Yes. Now, the gimmick in this match was that only the midgets could be in together, and only Lawler and Doink could be in together. Mm-hmm. So, theoretically, this also eliminated Jerry Lawler from the match. Queasy, this was a great spot. This was actually the best spot of the whole show. Okay, I'm lying. Queasy grabbed Pink by the ankles and held him up so he was almost doing like a headstand, but he was held by Queasy. And then all of a sudden, he just spun him on his head. And what's his name? Pink?
Pink.
One of them. Just takes like, just falls onto his back after being spun on his head.
Like
and
a top.
And Cheesy pinned Pink.
That was the finish. He spun him on his head.
And not to confuse Pink with the artist Pink. This was the midget Pink.
Oh, yeah.
Some people might be confused.
No
confusion?
Yeah.
Then there was a top rope crossbody by Dink onto Sleazy. And he must have had a visionary fall on Sleazy for like a 25 count. And then Cheesy runs in after a 20 count and just takes Sleazy and turns him on top of Dink. And the ref counts three. Dink was not even hit here. All they did was move the guy's legs over top and he was pinned.
It's
not believable.
I don't know. I don't know the physics of midget wrestling. Perhaps just the weight. It was simply too much.
Anyway, in all of this, I missed how Wink was eliminated. I guess I blinked and missed it. And afterwards, the babyface turn by the Royal Midgets, where Lawler wanted to take all the credit for the win, and then all the midgets attacked Lawler, who escaped, and then Doink came out and threw a pumpkin pie in the face of Jerry Lawler.
This was actually way too long for a comedy match, but it had some enjoyable spots and was more entertaining than I thought it would be.
Then, in something that you can only call it being sacrilegious, Todd Pettengill did a voiceover for an All Japan Pro Wrestling Women's event from the Tokyo Dome. And
the match featured was Bull Nakano versus Alundra Blaze for the WWF Women's title.
And Bull Nakano won the title. And then they did a promo with Bull Nakano where Todd Pettengill just didn't understand because Bull Nakano spoke Japanese and not English. And let's just play this.
Now, Bull Nakano obviously has to be an awesome feeling. Congratulations on becoming the new WWE Women's Champion.
WWE の世界チャンピオンになったのは日本人で私が初めてです。これからも日本人のチャンピオンは現れないでしょう。
Right.Well, I want to congratulate you on becoming the champion. It must feel very good. In English, please.
Champion なんだから、チャンピオンらしく扱えよ。
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously a very excited Bull Nakano, who was missing. There's a little language gap here, but any way you take it, the new WWE Women's Champion, Bull Nakano, congratulations.
どうもありがとう。
Right.Let's go back to ringside, Vince and Gorilla.
So at the end of this promo, I don't know necessarily what this was for. Just they announced the title match.
They flew Bull Nakano all the way to America
for a promo
to do this
to make fun of her in a promo
to do this 2-minute comedy bit. Way to build your title.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Ended up in a garbage less than a year later.
Yeah.
Next up is the WWF title match. You knew this was going long because this was the third match in. It's a submission match. But it only can end if one of the towel bearers threw the towel in. Bret Hart had the British Bulldog in his corner, and Bob Backlund had Owen Hart in his corner.
Yeah. There was just an interesting build to this match. The two of them had fought 3 months ago earlier on Superstars in a title match. At the time, Backlund was still his very vanilla, classic good guy on the comeback
Howdy
trail.
Doody.
Yes, Howdy Doody.
As they referred to him on TBS.
Yes, following his 10-year absence, he thought that he had won the match and won the title, but it only ended up being a close count, and Brett ended up pinning him. After that match, Backlund turned psycho, and then it was from this point forward that he became his crazy, paranoid character that we still see occasionally.
And I have to say, they built him up as a heel tremendously. With that
yes.
chicken wing crossface,
oh, yeah.
that move was over. Mm-hmm. To the point that they even announced, and this was probably bullshit, but that there was a hotline poll. I'm sorry, there was no such thing as online at this time, where 72% of those that called in voted that the chicken wing was more devastating than the sharpshooter.
They really did do a great, great job here. Stu and Helen were also ringside, and man, they put on an awesome performance too, I gotta say.
This featured some of the best acting in the history of wrestling.
Yes.
Mainly courtesy of Owen Hart. This match was a long way. This was like, I didn't time it, but it was like 35 minutes.
It was, yeah.
Way too long.
Well, the thing is, this match was... It was a submission match, and it was heavily focused on headlocks in the beginning. It was kind of boring, but it's completely logical. They made every single submission count. Like, I mean, from every abdominal stretch to sleeper holds to figure four. This match, I would say, for how little they did actually in the ring, I thought it was probably, you know, one of the best matches that told the story around what was happening actually in the ring.
And they did show the Bulldog at ringside, where I think he looked very bored, mainly because he had worked the match earlier and now had to stand for a half hour. They built it up where Brett eventually got the sharpshooter onto Backlund, and then Bulldog started chasing Owen around the ring. Owen got into the ring, the ref stopped the Bulldog, and Owen broke up the sharpshooter. And somehow this chase continued, and the Bulldog somehow knocked himself out cold for 15 minutes, of which no paramedics came to check on the Bulldog. They just let him lay there forever. And this allowed Backlund to get the crossface chicken wing on, because Owen was distracting Brett, who went back first into Backlund, who got the chicken wing on. And this, for me, was when the match... this was just the Owen Hart show.
Oh, yeah.
Because he started pleading to Stu and Helen, "He's my brother. He's going to break his arm. Do something." He had tears in his eyes.
Yes.
This was so good. They finally got up off their seats, went to ringside. Helen wanted to throw it in, but Stu was like, "No, Brett's a man.
Yeah.
Brett is going to last."
I got to say, big, big kudos to the WWF production at this time. They had a split screen going on.
This was so good.
With Backlund putting Brett and the chicken wing on one side. The other side, just Owen. Owen crying to Helen, to Stu, and it's really just all focused on Owen. Vince and Gorilla kept quiet for the most part. They just let the audio speak for itself.
And this was like a 6-minute chicken wing spot.
Oh, yeah.
It was a lengthy, lengthy spot.
This was awesome.
And the crowd could have turned on it, but they were so into this that finally Helen just ripped the towel away and threw it in. And Stu was pissed, but Helen felt she did the right thing for her son. This made Brett the sympathetic babyface. Mm-hmm. You had this maniac as your new champion. And then all of a sudden, Owen puts his hands in the air, cheers, and runs to the back that he has conquered Bret Hart. This was awesome.
This was awesome. And much, much, much respect to Bob Backlund, and also to the entire Hart family, Helen and Stu included, for an outstanding acting job.
This was the start of the best 3-day WWF title run in history. As Backlund would drop it 3 days later at a house show to Diesel.
Yeah.
We go backstage, and then Owen Hart cut this promo with Todd Pettengill.
Thank you very much, Vince. I am standing with Owen Hart. Obviously, we've just witnessed we thought you were having compassion for your brother. Vince McMahon said we're seeing the true Owen Hart. This obviously was some sort of setup.
A setup? You got it right. That was a setup. This is the greatest Thanksgiving of my life. And Mom and Dad, you fell right into my trap. You threw the towel in, and Brett, you're no longer the WWF champion. Mr. Backlund is. And Brett, I could have beaten you before, but you cheated. But now, you're nothing. You're below me. You're down there in the gutter, Brett. You're not a champion anymore. You're a loser. And I'm a king. And Brett, you're a nobody. I'm going to be the WWF Tag Team Champion. I am going to be a WWF Intercontinental Champion. And Brett, I am going to be the WWF World Heavyweight Champion. And I, unlike you, will never quit. I will never surrender. You're a quitter, Brett. Mom and Dad threw in the towel, and you're history, Brett. And I am the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be. Don't you forget it, brother. Woo!
Classic. That was good, but even better was the reaction of Vince McMahon and Gorilla Monsoon to Owen's actions.
What a creep! Unbelievable! I thought he was showing legitimate compassion. Tears were running down his face.
I actually feel betrayed. I mean, for Owen Hart to... He was pleading with his mom and dad.
How could you do that?
And all along...
How could you do that to your mother and father and brother? What kind of an ingrate... He's a worse individual than I thought he was. He's a creep. First class.
There's not a great deal you can say. Bob Backlund, the new World Wrestling Federation champion, and fans here.
A lot of folks crying in this arena.
Yeah.
And I don't blame them. Imagine what Stu and Helen feel like right now.
Let's go back up for more action.
They reacted that Owen Hart had committed treason. They were so disgusted by this, they didn't even want to continue on with the show. Gorilla was beside himself. Vince was just speechless. It was great. This angle was so good. I remember when I was a kid, I would have been 10 years old when this happened, and I thought Brett would never come back from this injury because it was so horrific.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, how can Bob Backlund be the WWF champion?
It even booking-wise, it made no sense at the time.
How is this company the same one now where we have Survivor Series, which just ended tonight, and boy, I'm sure that was a horrible show. As we taped this on Friday. We then go to the final Survivor Series elimination match of the night. It's Guts and Glory Way. The team of Lex Luger, Mabel, Adam Bomb, and the Smoking Guns in what might be the worst five-man crew ever assembled in professional wrestling. Mm-hmm. Taking on the million-dollar team of King Kong Bundy, Bam Bam Bigelow, Tatanka, and the Heavenly Bodies. 10 superstars, of which I would say Bam Bam Bigelow and Tom Pritchard were the workhorses of this match.
Mm-hmm.
This was a scary match on paper. Look at the baby faces. There is not a worker on that sideway. Luger, Mabel, Adam Bomb, prior to Chronic, and the Smoking Guns.
Yeah, what can you say? Nothing happens here until Mabel.
This was such a nothing match.
Yeah.
Lex Luger was this week's recipient of the Scott Putski Award. Boy, he was...
He's won it before, hasn't he?
I'm sure, yeah, he did win it before prior and retaining it this week.
Not much happens in this match until Mabel gets in the ring. And it's really in these types of matches that big men are best utilized because you can really see their size difference. He takes out Pritchard, and then Bam Bam delivers a moonsault and eliminates Adam Bomb.
Yes, and this was also a round where Mabel and Bigelow got knocked to the floor, and Mabel was counted out, and that's how they eliminated him. Then Bigelow eliminated Adam Bomb with the moonsault. Luger eliminated Jimmy Del Rey. Tatanka pinned Bart Gunn. There was a very clumsy splash by King Kong Bundy to eliminate Billy Gunn. Luger attempted a small package, which even that was pressing it, to eliminate Tatanka. And then that allowed King Kong Bundy to splash Luger and get the win for the heel. So two big heel wins in a row with Backlund and then the team of the Million Dollar Corporation.
Mm-hmm. Three heel wins in a row.
That's right. That's right. The Lawler team won as well. Geez, not a great night for the babyfaces.
No.
Then we go to the main event of the evening, which I'd forgotten about. Yokozuna against The Undertaker in a casket match, with Chuck Norris as the special enforcer on the outside to keep any of the heels from coming in. Because if you recall, earlier this year at the Royal Rumble, there was a casket match where all the heels came and attacked The Undertaker and basically killed him. In the angle. That's actually what they did. They killed him.
Yes. This, to me, was just your typical casket match. The story here is that Yokozuna is very, very afraid of caskets. And Taker had this huge one that was created just for Yokozuna.
And Jim Cornette took the best bump of the entire match, where he was punched by The Undertaker, jumped and took a back bump, and then they zeroed in where his eyes had rolled to the back of his head.
I don't like that, though.
Really?
Like that was too cartoonish.
I thought it was great.
Come on.
We're watching a match where the winner is put into a casket.
Yeah.
With Chuck Norris.
That I don't mind.
You enjoyed the midgets.
That I don't mind, but come on. Giggly, cartoon faces when you get punched? Come on, Jim Cornette.
He was hit by a dead man. The best was, there was this fan in the fifth row with a U.S. flag t-shirt, and he's instructing Taker how to roll Yokozuna. He was standing in his seat, instructing him the best way to move this gigantic sumo wrestler. Bundy and Bigelow both came down, and they got in the ref's face and Norris's face, and this allowed IRS to come from the ring to get in and attack The Undertaker. So Chuck Norris failed in his job to keep outside interference at a minimum.
And then what happened?
Taker was put in the casket at one point. Then Jarrett came out and took a horrible kick from Chuck Norris, and Chuck Norris almost lost his balance and fell, which would have been great.
See, but why did Chuck attack Jeff Jarrett?
Because he was going to interfere.
No, Jeff Jarrett wasn't provoking him at all. He just maybe wanted to walk out
and have
a look.
He got in his
shit. Chuck Norris just kicked him in the face. Unprovoked. Why did you do that?
He's Walker, Texas Ranger.
He got fucked up, man. That was a pretty good kick.
Taker was out on the canvas, and then he did his sit-up, and not a person in the arena reacted. It's the only time I've ever heard no one react to the big sit-up.
Well, they were just in awe of the kick.
Big boot to Yokozuna, who went into the casket, and then Undertaker unnecessarily grabs the Japanese flag, breaks it over his knee, and throws it in the casket with Yokozuna. What was that supposed to mean?
They're in Texas. That's what it means. Fuck those guys.
Disgusting.
This is for Pearl Harbor.
Undertaker wins and avenges Pearl Harbor. And that's the end of the Survivor Series 1994. A show that I'll give a 5 out of 10 to.
I really enjoyed that Backlund-Brett match, and I still have fond memories of it. So everything else, though, did nothing for me. I give it a 6.
Very average show. There's nothing too much you can harp on, but nothing to really write home about at the same time. Yeah. Owen Hart, to me, was the star of the show.
Absolutely.
I thought he was great. So that's our review of the 94 Survivor Series. Now, this week, we're going to be doing a contest on Facebook that we were discussing, where we're going to give away a DVD, and what should we give away?
Well, I don't know what you have. What do you have?
Okay, we're going to give away a copy of... We'll give away a good prize and a bad prize. We're going to give the SmackDown 10th Anniversary 3-disc set, and then I'm also going to give a shitty WWE pay-per-view from the last 3 or 4 years as well. So you win 2 DVDs with this. What we want you to do is that we know a lot of you guys like to post videos and stuff on our Facebook wall, the official Facebook group of Ask Away. Go join right now. We're at 235 members. I want you to find the most ridiculous wrestling clips, and the person that finds the best clip that me and Wei will judge will be the winner of this prize. So it can be from YouTube, Daily Motion, wherever you find it. Just post it onto the wall there on our Facebook wall. And then next week we will announce who had the best clip. And if anyone wants to vote for any of the clips, you can always vote if you like it or comment on it. Be fair. And then we will review it next week of who can find the best wrestling clip out there.
You guys
We're looking for hilarious.
Mm-hmm. That you guys have done a great job so far with all the video clips on the YouTube. Was there a winner from this past week?
Yes, Gary Weston was the one actually who won last week. This week we didn't really there wasn't really much feedback on the wall, to be honest. So
guys, step your
didn't
game.
Didn't have a real gift to give away this week. So okay. You can always send us your feedback to john@thefightnetwork.com or wai@thefightnetwork.com, and we'll read it on the air next week. I was getting a bunch of requests that I was looking back at, and one that kind of stuck out for me that I have a curiosity to go back and watch. They called it the most overbooked WWF event ever, and it was the Survivor Series from 1998. So I thought we could squeeze out one more Survivor Series before the end of the month. And this was from 98, and it featured a WWF title tournament booked by Vince McMahon and Vince Russo.
Mm.
And it looks like an interesting one.
I'm not looking forward to that, actually.
Another person requested World War III, and I'm just not ready to go back to WCW quite yet.
Let's spend some time with the Fed.
Yeah,
for a little bit.
I did somewhat enjoy the Survivor Series, and there were a few I was considering, but I narrowed it down to the 98 one. But since I'm picking the review for next week, that means we go out with your song of choice, Wei Ting. So what are we going to be listening to as we go out?
Well, in honor of the wonderful performance from Owen Hart, I would just like to go out with the Hollies. He ain't heavy, he's my brother.
The road is long.
I'm begging you.